Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. If you like this or any other episode of the show, consider making a donation. If you'd like to provide sustaining contributions, you'll find a number of small, recurring monthly options. Find out more at thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. While I work on this episode, snow falls outside, forming a fresh winter blanket upon the earth. The grass sits dormant, hidden beneath. The tops of onions, overwintering in beds to produce seed next year, appear unruly and ready to awaken from their cold sleep. The pine and hemlock wear coats of white, while the oaks stand stark and nude against the gray sky. With this as the backdrop, I consider how to prepare for the coming spring, but also how to use the principles of permaculture to design for locations where the climate is at least as cold as where I live, or colder. For the sake of this discussion and considering cold climate strategies for permaculture design, I'm looking at areas that are in the continental range or colder of the Köppen climate classification, which have a coldest winter average month that drops below freezing, 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius. For those of you familiar with hardiness zones, as initially developed by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, this corresponds approximately to zones 7A or 7B. More information for both of these ideas are included via links to the respective wiki pages in the show notes. The strategies for this conversation, in the form of little aphorisms, are: build it and they will grow, cover up, it's cold out there, climb the hills, don't rest in the valley, know your natives, read your seed and plant catalogs, and lastly, mulch, mulch, mulch. Our ability as human beings to modify our environment is incredible. More and more evidence shows that the idea of a pristine landscape roamed by hunter-gatherers in the Americas before European immigration were largely mythical. Since time long before written records, humanity changed the world to fit our needs, first with fire, and then ever newer technologies. We have this ability, so, within reason, when adapting the methods of design to cold climates, why not use them? When establishing a new site, or where it's particularly cold, a stark example is building and growing inside a greenhouse. For something less dramatic, we might include a bioshelter on a home, or set aside space in a sunny room. But there isn't a need to take everything indoors to accomplish a lot of good. Here's where our observation abilities come in, and in turn, an understanding of microclimates. I'm still surprised whenever I wake to find frost crystallized over the plants in my front yard, but to look out the back, and in the small run between my house and the stream, the plants remain soft, unfrozen, and wet. The house in this case serves as both a break from the cold air that comes down into the valley bottom, while the mass of the house captures the heat of sunlight and radiates the warmth back well into the evening, and the stream, even as ice begins to form along the banks, continues to moderate the temperature. And that example comes from both naturally occurring resources such as the stream, but also from that world built by humanity, the home. If you haven't seen the videos yet, look at the links in the show notes to Sepp Holzer's work in the Austrian Alps and what he's able to do using ponds and hugelkultur, or look at the photo gallery from the Central Rocky Mountain Permaculture Institute where they're growing citrus at 7,200 feet above sea level. Here are people changing the landscape around them to modify their local climate to meet their needs. For our individual uses, consider the principles of permaculture. Observe your area. Where does the climate have the least impact for any particular issue, such as frost pockets, or cold desiccating winter winds? As you begin to map out the zones and sectors and vectors, how can you use what's already existing in the landscape to your advantage, with the least amount of work, and then move ever outward as we do through the edges of our zones to go from that smallest change, that least amount of work, to ever-increasing amounts. But again, use what's already there first, and then build outward. Going back to my example of the microclimate of my home site, that house stream connection could serve as a place for me to try and grow figs. For additional use of solar mass, perhaps I espaliate the tree along the wall. Though our ability to grow in any given area is limited by temperatures and the amount of light available, if we work at it, we can mitigate those issues. Though ideally the long-term goal of permaculture is to design ourselves and any inputs out of the system, we need yields in the beginning, which means taking a different track to get there, until we build up the other necessary components in our design. To that end, when cold weather sets in, you can cover up your plants to keep frost at bay with something like a row cover, or as my wife likes to do, to upend a cardboard box over a tender plant from dusk until dawn the next day, so long as the temperature doesn't dip too low overnight and the daytime temperatures still rise above freezing. We've been able to continue harvesting ever-bearing strawberries and tomatoes well into fall, and even as the first snows, settle onto the ground with this method. The simple protection does a lot, but so does keeping ourselves out of the valley to climb those hills. Because as air grows cold, it sinks and moves down into low places. Separation of a few vertical feet may make the difference between success and death among our plant friends. So if you can avoid doing so, don't plant in a valley, as I'm reminded every time I look out in my yard that I am in the valley bottom, and the problems that come with it, or even in a depression, if you can, in cold climates. If the landscape you're in allows for it, seek out elevation and good solar exposure. Getting up, so long as it's not so far to create other problems, such as wind along a ridgeline, keeps the cold air from settling in, and if you have a sun-facing hill, increases the gains from that solar heat as the sun dips ever downward in that low winter angle that greets the solstice. And even building a mound, such as a hugelkultur bed, can change the climate for plants enough to make a difference between something that would struggle and something that would thrive, which is one of the reasons why you want to seek out the hardiest plants that you can. To that end, know your natives. Many native plants are edible, and if they already survive in the area that you're in without cultivation, why not go ahead and use them? You can help them along in your own design. Field guides for many regions of the world are available to start searching for edible plants in your area. Though I do recommend some caution. There are numerous lookalikes that can get you into a bit of trouble, and some downright nasty ones that will do quite a lot more damage. If you're hesitant, don't eat it, and seek out more information or perhaps an expert in your local area who can help you walk through the landscape and identify your edibles. Once you've found those awesome natives that you want to make part of your diet, consider doing some plant breeding. Find the ones that are really tasty, propagate them, and continue this process. And as you do, make sure you spread the word around. You'll add to the library of permaculture knowledge that's available and help others who may be in your situation in the future. We need to know what's out there to increase our knowledge and the selection of available plants. And when you're not going out into forays to bring those natives to your own property, we still have the wonderful option of ordering seed. So read your seed and plant catalogs. Through research, and more research, you can find something to grow just about anywhere, but you need a place to start. I found that a seed catalog is that perfect, simple place to do so. The description for each entry contains a myriad of useful information, often more that's printed on the seed packet, which makes me think I should do an episode about how to read a seed packet. Probably better as a video, but anyway. Keep any of your seed catalogs handy to look through regularly. They make great bathroom reading, especially while in the tub or otherwise spending more than a moment in there. Or, depending on which catalog it is, leave them on the coffee table or somewhere else handy. Some, like Seeds of Change or Territorial Seed Company or The Cook's Garden, are downright beautiful, and you can read them for the pictures if you like. Or, as I've done on more than one occasion, I teach my children colors or how to count. Honey, what color is this Swiss chard? How many varieties does this company offer? And in the process, just watch the children go as they dive in, egged on by their own enthusiasm. But there I digress again. It's one of those days. So I say to keep these around and browse often so that you become familiarized with what's available. You can mine the catalog and the entries for more information and get ideas for where to take your research. If you see a pomegranate in the catalog that might grow where you are, but you're not too sure, you know, maybe you can change the local environment so that it will, or better yet, that could serve as a point to try and find something that's already adapted to where you are. It seems like every year when I get the course of catalogs and browse the perennial section, that there are colder and colder, hardier plants available. There's a new cultivar that's been found that can live a little bit further away from the equator or take different conditions. Who knows? You might be surprised too and find some great things to include in your garden. But you need to know what's available in order to do that, which is important because you'll get out of a design what you put into planning it. Do what you can to make it the best you can, to find all these pieces that you want to include. Do the building and the grow out. But remember that the design can always be better. There's always something else that you can include. So don't become paralyzed by constantly second-guessing yourself or analyzing and going, was that really the best thing to put there? Or should I really order this or should I order that? Pick something. Remember to act. Go with it. But if you're sitting and pondering and you're not sure what to do next while you're turning that idea over in your head or considering what next to scribble down, you can always go out and be working in your design mulching, mulching, mulching. It's our simple ground covering that does so much in any climate, and more especially in a cold one. A nice thick layer of mulch helps regulate soil temperatures and can keep the ground from freezing solid, allowing you to store root vegetables in the ground over winter. Another option is to wait until the ground is fully frozen, and then apply a nice heavy mulch to keep the ground rock solid through those colder months. Sounds a little counterintuitive to want to keep the ground cold around your plants, but in this case, that's so that if you get some cycles of warm and cold that cause the ground to thaw and freeze and thaw and freeze, that the soil can buckle and heave upward, pushing roots and other materials up out of the soil, and in the process exposing those roots and killing them when the cold weather returns. But as that cold weather begins to break, we can use dark mulches to soak up the radiant solar heat to warm the soils in spring and help plants to start growing. And then as the end of that growing season comes, you can extend it by a couple of weeks or maybe even a couple of days, but depending on what you've planted, that could be enough. But again, you'll know that by reading your seed catalogs and knowing how long it takes for something to come to maturity. And those couple of days can make a huge difference. My favorite mulches are compost, wood chips, straw, and the trimmings from my evergreen trees. I like to use the compost and wood chips in combination, with about an inch or two of compost spread over the soil, then topped with 2 to 4 inches of wood chips, depending on whether this is in my garden, where the lesser amounts apply, or around my perennials, where I go towards that thicker end. I find that that nice, rich compost serves as a nice top dressing, and then the wood chips protect the compost and the soil as the rains come in and allows that to percolate through and carry those nutrients downward, but also allow some of those nutrients to be available as the wood chips decompose. The straw goes over my strawberries come fall and to protect root crops, including, as I mentioned, my overwintering onions, and the evergreen trimmings go really wherever I can put them. I find that they form a nice, big, bouncy layer over top of my plants, great for keeping snow off. And then during summer, as I move those off, they might go around the ground from the tree where they came from. And then as the needles drop off and I'm left with bare branches, those get moved and used to develop my hugelkultur beds. Mulching options abound and serve as a good place to begin the process of learning what works for a particular situation and provide a different simple point to start considering your solutions. Relative to the experience of our friends and colleagues in warmer climates, tackling a cold climate seems daunting at first, but by using the core principles of permaculture, you have the tools to design anywhere. As you consider where you are and the options ahead of you, should you have any questions or comments from this show, please feel free to contact me, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com or the voicemail line, 717-827-6266. If you have something more in-depth that you'd like to talk about, I'm also available for one-on-one consulting sessions. You can contact me for more information about that. Until the next time, take care of the earth, yourself, and each other.